Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When was the last time you went for a walk? Just walked around the neighborhood, walked to the corner store, just took a stroll, just around your house, just to see what's going on, maybe meet the neighbors. Maybe you don't have sidewalks around your house. Maybe it's challenging. Maybe there's no shade. It's just too punishing to get out of the house during the summertime. That's what makes San Antonio in places not a very good walkable city, and people are trying to change that. How can we make San Antonio a more pedestrian friendly city? That's, we're going to talk about that this half hour, and we encourage you to call in with your ideas and suggestions. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're joined by John Austin. He's a member of the American Planning Association and the American Institute of Certified Planners. And also with us back again is Laura McKiernan. She is the director of the local data group CI Now. And welcome back to The Source. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
So how walkable is San Antonio right now, Laura?
Not very. We use a metric called walk score to measure our walkability, and we score overall a 36 out of 100. A very walkable neighborhood is considered a score of 70 or more. So as with everything else, walkability differs by neighborhood, but we don't have any neighborhoods in the walker's paradise category.
So what do you consider as you come up with that 36 score?
So this is a proprietary secret sauce they've got, their methodology for calculating this. But they're looking at, they assign points for amenities within a 5-minute walk. So can you get to food, to shopping that you need to do? Can you get to other amenities that, you know, shopping that you need to do, your job, that kind of thing? And I'm sure John can expand a whole lot more on that. And then they assign points for things like population density and how long are the blocks. But what they don't take into consideration is the condition of the sidewalks and whether there is shade and those kinds of things. So that 36 is really probably a best case scenario that's not.
And do they look at my neighbor's dog that comes and charges at me every time
That's my favorite of actually, SA 2020 has some calls to action on this issue, and one of them is to please spay neuter your pets. So many dogs out there that are running loose that are actually owned, but people are afraid to walk because there's dogs out on every block.
Okay, so John Austin, what are you looking at when you, as a part of the American Planning Association, San Antonio's walkability?
Sure. First of all, we need to define, walkability a little bit, in detail. If somebody wants to, walk around the neighborhood just for recreational purposes, which is fine. But in this case, as Laura mentioned, we're looking at it for more transportation, purposes. So if you're replacing your, let's say, driving your car with, walking to store or your destination. So in that regard, San Antonio is scoring very low. But there are some differences between neighborhoods. For example, the ones in Loop 410, they seem to have, from the old days, the grid street pattern system, which make it a little bit more walkable because you have more alternatives. And also the size of the blocks are shorter compared to other parts of the town. So if you look at that 36 point, the walk score map, you see some areas, including downtown and surrounding downtown, but mostly or definitely within Loop 410, they have much higher compared to higher score compared to.
So our legacy neighborhoods are more walkable generally.
Yes.
Because and so how does that make a difference that the blocks are smaller? It's just easier to grid around.
Yeah, it's easier to grid, and also the block size means smaller. That means you have more intersections, let's say, within a square mile area. And that, provides much higher connectivity compared to,
So you don't have a concentration of traffic.
Right. Concentration of, choices to be able to, reach your destination.
Sure. Okay. So are we stuck with this mediocre, not even mediocre, score of walkable San Antonio? How can we raise the score, John?
Well, obviously, we need to make places walkable, but how do we do that? Because it's not an easy job. Even though walking is more like transportation related, you know, term, but it's heavily influenced by the surrounding, you know, buildings or type of, you know, development. As long as we keep continued, you know, prioritizing, you know, cars by, you know, providing huge, you know, parking lots in front of the stores and things like that, those things take away from the quality of the place, which makes it, you know, walkable. So hopefully throughout the, you know, years when San Antonio continues to redevelop, and then hopefully new development will prioritize, you know, pedestrians or other, you know, bicyclists, non-motorist, you know, users. So by, you know, putting the, you know, buildings close to the street, providing shade since we're, you know, South Texas, and mixed-use buildings such as, you know, like apartment up top floor and retail bottom floor, which makes, you know, create convenience. So actually convenience is the key word here. We need to provide that convenience for pedestrians if you want to make a place walkable. And there are tools for planners and designers already exist that we know how to do it, but it takes whole community, you know.
But this is doable. Something can be done to change that in Solar.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing we're stuck with, I think is the bottom line, and how hard is it going to be to get there? I think definitely, you know, there's planning and processes all the time to put together, like the city's comprehensive plan, I say tomorrow, bond packages. There's planning going on all the time. So keeping walkability in the front of our minds as we're doing that. And citizens can help drive that process, honestly. And then on a smaller scale, I know there's one instance where some urban planners and Dignity Hill residents and the city of San Antonio worked together to change some of the landscaping.
On Cherry Street.
Yeah, you already know about that. Yeah, so, you know, that's an example of a concrete win on a small scale, but how if we actually pay attention to these things?
So when you look at that story, there was a plan originally to make it a walkable corridor for Dignity Hill, and then those amenities fell away, and the neighborhood had to get together and fight to get them returned. Mm-hmm. And so the city had to find the money elsewhere, but they were able to do so.
They were.
And so now when you go down that avenue, there's green space, there's trees. It's not just what it looked like it was going to be. It was just a curbs and street.
Yeah. Exactly. Concrete and dirt. Yeah. It's like anything else. We've got competing priorities. You've got a lot of folks in San Antonio that don't care about walkability. They want drivability, right? Parkability. And San Antonio doesn't have, I think, overall, obviously, some of us are all about walkability, but a lot of folks are not willing to do the walking that you would have in New York or D.C., for example. Like a 20-minute walk for us is a long, long walk, and it's just really not in a lot of cities that are considered walkable. So every time you're trying to do the landscaping or the accessible curbs or anything, keeping up with sidewalks, that's going to be competing with, I think I read that you said a parking space takes up 350 square feet. You know, that's a big chunk of real estate, but, you know, just one car, and then multiply by how many of us want to park our cars, me included.
All right, so we do have a bond election coming up here in the city of San Antonio. Voters will be deciding on whether or not to sign off on $850 million in development for the city. A lot of it's going for curbs and sidewalks and street repair, we keep hearing. So more sidewalks. Is the bond package a walkable, friendly package for voters, if you care about that?
Well,
John?
I think bond package has that, you know, the sidewalk, you know, component, which is absolutely necessary to be able to, you know, walk. We need, you know, sidewalks, period. But it doesn't end there. I mean, just having a sidewalk alone, it does not make a place walkable. I mean, we need more than that.
That's a start.
It's a start. That's true. You know, I completely agree with that. And definitely we can start with that. But as Laura mentioned a little bit as well, that, you know, we need to prioritize that if it's going to be, you know, pedestrian-oriented or pedestrian-friendly place, or is it going to be still, you know, driver's friendly place. So as long as we make that choice, you know, very clear, and then we put our money where we think there should be, then, you know, it will be, you know, more walkable. But as I said, you know, sidewalks alone is not going to cut it.
And like the walk score is really, it all boils down. So I should say walking, I think as a public health person, I'm required by my membership card in the world to say walking has its own benefits, right, just inherently. But the point of what Walk Score is getting at is, can you do your daily errands without getting in a car? To what degree can you do your daily errands? So another piece
that's
of
like
it is
sidewalks.
That's
like a foreign concept
right.
here.
Yeah.
But if you live in a major metropolitan city like Boston.
Unless you don't have a car, every time I get on this show, I'm going to say, unless you are different from you. If you don't have a car, you actually do figure out how to deal with your groceries and your three children, and it's not easy. But we have to have things to walk to. Like John mentioned, the mixed use, that you've got retail on the ground floor and residential above it, or retail here and housing nearby. And that's about, you know, the UDC, right? There's a lot of policy that plays in here.
It sounds like a chicken and the egg kind of a situation.
Yes.
Where, you know, you're not going to get a lot of commerce that's going to cater to walkable, you know, walkable
right.
city because we don't have a lot of walkers, and then we're not going to have anything to motivate people to not get in their car because there's not a whole lot going on. But then when I go to Woodlawn Lake and I see people in mass walking, there are people out there who want to walk, but they drove to Woodlawn Lake to go walk. And it's like, well, if their neighborhoods were ship shape, then they wouldn't have to do that. They could walk around the neighborhoods. They could get a RASPA and enjoy their and meet their neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, in the urban planning world, there's this new, you know, movement. It's called Congress for the New Urbanism, which, you know, promotes, you know, this walkable, you know, places.
Okay, so I want to talk about that Congress for a New Urbanism. What that is, how we can maybe pull that into San Antonio and make the city a more walkable city, how that would benefit our health, our community, and just be fun. call in if you got a question or comment, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. How can we make San Antonio a more pedestrian-friendly city? We have a bond election coming up in May, $850 million, and part of that will go for complete streets and more streets and sidewalks in San Antonio. But that doesn't in and of itself make the city a more walkable city. We're speaking with John Austin. He's a member of the American Planning Association and the American Institute of Certified Planners. And Laura McInerney, she is the director of the local data group, CINOW. And they've been doing the numbers, looking at San Antonio's walkability. We have a walkability score of 36 out of 100, and it should be about 70, really. So we're not a very walkable city. What do you think about that? We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. And let's get Monica on the air. And Monica, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My husband and I chose not to have a car for a year. I spent a lot of time in Mexico City. My son just came back from Germany. So walking is something that you do a lot there. You just do a lot. And it's no big deal. We learned a lot about San Antonio when we chose not to have a car. We learned the bus rounds. We learned bicycles. We learned how to walk places that you normally wouldn't think, shortcuts. But we also learned that the city is a lot more attractive and it has a lot more interesting things than you would if you drive a car.
That is for sure, Monica. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And how did it work out? When did you finally get a car? What broke that stamina there?
I have a child that goes to school, like, you know, 50 miles from me, and I can't ride him on a bike. I learned to ride my bike from Ingram all the way down to the airport, and I learned the back roads, and it was very nice. The only thing is that when you talk about Woodlawn Lake is that in Germany and Mexico, since it is a walkable city, people will walk places and it's not too bad. But here you have neighborhoods with nothing and they're not going to get sidewalks when they're private neighborhoods. Or you're walking in the west side and you don't, you know, there's nothing. Although the west side has a great bike lane. But we're also not bike friendly. So it just kind of, you know, it's kind of sad.
Monica, thank you.
So it can be done.
All right. I appreciate your call. So her point, though, which I really liked, was that when you slow down, and when you do walk, you see so much more. Even around your own block. You thought you knew your block and your neighborhood. Suddenly things that you have been driving past all these years are right there. Go ahead.
There are actually much more, you know, advantages of, you know, walking. I mean, obviously, you know, sightseeing, you know, places that you've never seen before. Plus, you know, health for your, you know, physical health. plus is mental health, plus it's, social aspect of it if other, people in a place are, walking. But it doesn't end that. It's like air pollution and then less being, causing, car crashes. And then another important part is, financial aspect of it, that, if you don't have a car, then you have to pay all that money for various things. And on the public sector also, if areas are more walkable, that means it's more dense, that means less, infrastructure to build and maintain, which is a huge, chunk of money from, cities, budget to build all those big giant, roads and miles, and it, adds up. And so when you're in a walkable place, it's much more, cost effective for both, public and persons.
So when we were going to break, John, you were talking about the Congress of Urbanism. What is that?
Congress of Urbanism actually is a reaction to the urban movement that took place after World War II in America, that we have heavily become, suburban society, that, we just sprawled and it's everywhere that cars and all the subdivisions and more and more. And Congress for New Urbanism emerged as a reaction to that. Basically, let's go back to our origins of, traditional, neighborhoods, walkable places, all those, mixed uses, and let's make, again, moving people, or let's make people, center of that, ideology rather than the automobile. And it's strong today, and this year, their 25th, Congress, I believe, is going to happen in Seattle. And so for quarter century, they've been trying to promote that, more traditional or walkable, urban development in America.
Okay, another caller with Linda. And Linda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I just wanted to talk about hearing everything you said about walkability at the comment. We've been in our neighborhood, Colonies North, for 32 years now. And we moved here because of the sidewalks. But gradually, there's HEB, walking distance, Indian restaurant, a great Mexican restaurant, mail. We can send our mail off on UPS. We can walk, cleaners, bank, etc. And recently, the city added bicycle lanes on our two major streets. So it's been gradual, but it has been evolving, and we live in a very walkable neighborhood now. But it does, I don't know how the planning happened. We just happen to be lucky, I guess.
Okay, well, Linda, good for you. I'm glad that you've got it working for you. But let me ask you, Laura, if people do find themselves in a situation like Linda, that they do have, they just have to be lucky and they can have these resources, if they go out and they start walking and using them, maybe that's the first step to break the chicken and the egg conundrum.
The virtuous cycle and the vicious cycle. And these are the things that I find fascinating, is wondering, when you see things cluster together, what drives something else. I don't remember off the top of my head where Colonies North is.
It's right up the street here. It's like around Callahan and Wurzbach, Colonnade, yeah.
Okay. So, if you have people who care about sidewalks, move to a neighborhood, have those people organized and tried to influence what comes to their neighborhood? We see that there's some friendly infrastructure, enough people, and there's income, so the amenities come. It seems reasonable to put your dry cleaner and your bank there and that kind of thing. And if you don't have those things, how do you start that cycle? But I think certainly, starting with our local plans, getting involved in that, getting involved in your neighborhood association or your homeowners association, all the government boards and commissions, and start advocating for that in your own neighborhood. I mean, we saw that in downtown about a grocery store. We just talked about the Cherry Street situation. So, and I'm sure you have thoughts about that, John.
Well, I mean, definitely, engaging with, public, process is the key, because what the public is, all the, improvements on the, public right-of-way is going to take place. And being part of that, process will help you to kind of steer where all the, money's or decisions going to be made. I want to talk a little bit about downtown, because downtown is our the most, you know, walkable part of, you know, San Antonio, and all the surrounding neighborhoods like Cherry Street on the east side of downtown. They're very prone to, you know, become real, you know, walkable places, because the DNA is there already, because those areas were built prior to the automobile age. So they have that, you know, street system, and all, you know, you can see some, you know, corner stores in neighborhoods, which unfortunately we don't practice too much in today's world, but they can come back. And those areas, definitely, those are the low-hanging fruits for us to kind of turn them into, you know, walkable areas, and then kind of spreads out inside Loop 410 as much as we can.
Okay, another caller, Sam. And Sam, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm a disabled veteran in San Antonio. You know, I'm mobile, but a lot of my friends are only mobile through motorized wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. And I hear story after story where areas that may work for people that can walk are missing the simple things, like, you know, inclines to get them up on sidewalks, or busy areas where, you know, there may not be sidewalks on both sides of the street. And when we get to the point where these areas are accessible for people in wheelchairs, then they're great for everyone. Yeah. But just because they're great for people that can walk, maybe keeping a huge part of our population, or a needy part, from being able to access stores and, you know, dry cleaners and medical. So this, to me, is the goal of making it more walkable.
Okay, Sam, good point. Thank you so much. And that ties into aging in place, so that as our community ages, being able to get out and walk around takes on added importance. Laura?
Yeah, I'm grinning over here because I spent my morning with the transportation work group of the SALSA initiative, which is Successfully Aging and Living in San Antonio. And these were some of the things that they were talking about, especially the point that if we make our city friendly for people who are differently abled, who move slower, who can't drive a car necessarily, then we're making it better for everybody. And again, you know, competing priorities are an issue. But I live in an old Central City neighborhood, and I was driving home the other day and saw an older woman. She seemed like she was in about her 60s, pushing her husband in a non-motorized wheelchair uphill in the middle of the street, because the curbs are lined with cars and the sidewalks are broken. So, I mean, that is not a walkable wherever they were trying to go.
Okay, we've got about a minute left. So, John Austin, you want to bring it home here?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I would like to talk about the aging in the same, you know, place. It's very important because it points out to the, let's say, lack of housing types in our neighborhoods. And when you have a neighborhood just solely, you know, typical single-family home, it usually points to, let's say, you have a family with kids. But when you age, then, you know, you don't need that kind of space.
It maintains your independence and your ability to actually get out and get the blood pumping a little
bit.
So there's all sorts of benefit to establishing neighborhoods, put them in a way that people can age in place, have walkability neighborhoods, get out and interact with your neighborhood and your neighbors.
Independence and connectivity, those two things.
Independence and connectivity. Two words we're going to end on. Thank you so much as we talk about San Antonio, making the city a more pedestrian-friendly place. John Austin, he's a member of the American Planning Association, the American Institute for Certified Planners. Also with us is Laura McKinnon. She is the director of the local data group, See Now. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.